Okay, welcome everyone. We find ourselves on Yud Gimel Amud Beis on 13b. We actually covered a lot of it last time, to be honest. We find ourselves, for those looking at the Tzura Sadaf, we find ourselves on the first big line, Ves Ma'amar Mordechai Esther Osa. So I would guess it's either the second or third section in the art scroll. Very unlikely that it's in the first section, just based on we're basically somewhere between a quarter to halfway down.
13B2.
Okay, Shkoach Henry, we're on 13B2. Sounds like R2D2.
There you go.
All right, so here we go. Again, this is all, you know, just get used to this for a while, that basically what the Gemara is doing is it's going through the Megillah and is providing rabbinic commentary on the Megillah. So I remember growing up, we had the Purim story tape. I'm sure I told you about it, and they incorporated all these details into it. And where they get it from, they got it from the Gemara over here. So as I'm reading through the Gemara, I'm like, oh, that's how they knew about that detail and put it into the stories we heard as kids. So buckle up. Here we go. That's Ma'amar Mordechai Esther Osa. Now, some things they selectively did not include in, and you'll figure that out momentarily. So what does it mean that Esther did as Mordechai wanted her to do? Amar Yirmiyah Shehaisa Mar Dam Nida L'Chachayim. She would make sure to show her Dam Nida to the rabbis. So it's interesting. I forgot who I saw this by, but I had the same thought came to my mind when I read the Gemara. That's Dafka, she's supposed to show it to the Chachamim, not to Mordechai. This is actually, I think, a Machlokas interpretation, whether she was showing her the blood, the Dam Nida, to Mordechai, or whether she was showing it to other Rabbanim. From the Gemara, it sounds like she was showing it to other Rabbanim, to the Chachamim, which makes sense, actually, because a husband is actually not supposed to paskin Nida, his own Nida Shailas, because there's a very high level of bias involved. So it's possible that Mordechai Dafka wanted her to go to other rabbis when she required a consultation. Kasher Haisa Bamana Ito, so Darshan, the next part there. Amar Rabba Bar Lema, Mishmei Derav, Shehaisa Omedes Mecheko Shech Hashverosh, Vitovelz Vyoshevis Becheko Shel Mordechai. So this line is going to be difficult to understand. We will elaborate more. I think it's on Daf Tesvav. We will discuss this in greater detail. But essentially, she would be with Ahasuerus intimately, and then she would be Toveles. She would go either to wash herself, Rashi says, to cleanse herself, Machmas Nekiyos, but it can mean also have to do with our previous discussion about going to the mikvah, and then she would go and be with Mordechai. Now, I'm going to ask, wait a minute. If she's married to Mordechai, like we learned previously, and she's having relations with Ahasuerus, what do we call that in halakhic terminology? That's nus. That's adultery. She's married to Mordechai and having sexual relations with another man. That's adultery. So that means she's asur labal, asur labola. She should be forbidden both to Mordechai and to Ahasuerus. And there's a whole tosos that deals with this as well. And essentially, the distinction is that initially she did not really consent to the sexual relations with Ahasuerus, but then at a later point when she wanted to make her case to him, that's when she actively participated in the relations. And so that's when she became usher to Mordechai, and that's what it means when she says, Kasher avadati, avadati, I have become surely lost to you at this point. But Tosos right here on our daf has the following question. It's very weird formatting for those who are looking in the Gemara here. So you look at Tosos, Vitovelis, Vyoshevis, Bechegel, Shamorchai. Tosos asks the following question. Vim Tomar, Lohayasham, Avchana, Shlosha, Chadashim, Shevichol, Yom, Haya, Osarasha, Matsoy, Etzla. Wait a minute. The halacha is that, let's say a woman gets a divorce or loses her husband and she wants to get married. She's not allowed to be intimate with the next man until 3 months have passed. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, we need to do havchana. We need to be able to be mavchin whose child it is. Is it the first man's child or the second man's child? So if she has a child, you know, we see that she has a child down the line, it's going to be unclear to us whether it was late term from the first guy or early from the second guy. So therefore, you have to wait 3 months. How could she be every day going from Achash Yerush to Mordechai, which is like really crazy when you think about like how that even worked out, but that's beyond me. So V'yesh Lomar, Tosus answers, Shahaisa Misham Meshes B'moch, that she would use a moch. A moch is it's like a cloth of sorts, like almost like a condom kind of that they would use. So the question was, you know, who was using the cloth? Was it Achashverosh or was it Mordechai? Well, for Mordechai, it'd be usher to use it because, you know, just quick Hilchos birth control. The kind of birth controls that are permissible in halacha are the ones that don't interfere with intercourse. That's why birth control pills are an okay, but using something like a condom is generally problematic because it interferes directly with the physical intercourse. So how the question that the Mefarshim ask is, on Tosfos, I think the Meir Shav brings this up, is how can Mordechai be using it? It's usher for him. And if Achashverosh was using it, then how is it possible that Esther and Achashverosh wound up having a child together? So how does that work out? So he answers, based on what we said earlier, that initially when she was in a situation of ones, she didn't want to be having relations with him. That's when the moch was utilized. But then later on, once she was the one who initiated and she became usher to Mordechai, that's when she finally had a child from Achashverosh. Okay. Anyway, that's all additional mafarshim. Let's bring us back to the Gemara. So back to the Gemara, where are we over here? Bayamim ha'hein. Mordechai yoshe b'shar ha'melech. Kotzaf Bigson v'Seresh. So this is the whole story now of the two guards, Bigson and Seresh, who wanted to poison Mordechai, poison Achashverosh. Arech yevar ava amar Rabbi Yochanan. Hiksev akash baruch hu adon al abadav lasas v'tzon tzadik. So we're going to have one instance that we see where God made a master incensed with his servant for the benefit of a tzaddik. Umanu, and who was the tzaddik that benefited? Yosef, Shnemar, Vishami Tonunar Ivri. So as we know in the story where Paro gets upset, he gets angered with his servants. So then he puts the baker guy and he puts the wine guy into jail, and they meet Yosef, and it all turns out well in the end because of them. Yosef eventually gets out of jail. Avadim al donehen lasos nitzel tzadik, and likewise, God will sometimes make the servants angry with their master in order to benefit, to provide a miracle for the righteous. What is this case? Umanu Mordechai tichsiv vayivada adavar le Mordechai, became known to Mordechai what Bigson and Seresh were up to. Now, if you ever think about it, Bigson and Seresh, if they had a plot to kill the king, why were they just talking out loud for anyone to hear? If they saw Mordechai over there listening into their conversation, you'd think they would try to be a little bit more discreet about their plans to kill the king. So Amar Yochanan, Bigson and Seresh shnei tarsiim havu, v'yimisavrin b'loshon torsi. So They were Tarsian. They were from a different country. Welcome, Toby. So because they're from a different country and are speaking a foreign language, therefore they thought, but Omrim, so what did they say? From the moment that Esther came into Achashverosh's life, we never got any sleep. He was always asking for, it's funny, the way that they portrayed in the children's version is a little bit different. It was just that Achashverosh is very thirsty at night, and they don't fill in the rest of the details that you see here in the Gemara of why he was thirsty in particular. So they were complaining that they always had to, bring water for Achashverosh to drink during the night. So they came up with a plan. You know what? Let's take some poison. We'll put it in the bucket of water that he drinks from, and then he'll die. And we're on a Yud Gimel Amud Beis, 13b. We're in the middle. What are we? Are we on the third? We just had someone join us. We're 13b to the third, I imagine.
No, still on B2 for another.
Still on B2. Okay, thank you. Now, why were they speaking about all of this out loud where Mordechai could hear them? Well, they were speaking a foreign language. They didn't realize that Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin. And the members of the Sanhedrin, there were a lot, you know, they had to study a lot of things. One of the things they had to know were all 70 languages, which makes sense because when we were learning Makos last year, we learned that when someone comes to Beis Din and they come to give testimony, the Dayanim have to understand the testimony being given. If I recall correctly, there's an issue actually with there being an intermediary for those purposes because there could be broken telephone. So it was important. It was important for the members of the Sanhedrin to be fluent or fluent enough in all 70 languages. So Mordechai actually understood what they were talking about. You know, it's like if you ever go to Israel and then like, oh, you know, they start bad-mouthing Americans right in your face. And if you know a little bit of Hebrew, you're like, thanks, guys. Much appreciated. So that's, you know, it happens where, you know, someone's speaking Spanish. They think you don't know Spanish. That's basically what happened over here. So Amarlo, going back to the conversation between Bixam and Sarish. Excuse me. Follow a mishmarti mishmartecha shava. Wait, but we're not on the same shift. So what do we do? Amarlo, ani yishmor mishmarti mishmartecha. I will come in for my shift and for your shift so we can hatch this together. Unclear to me why both of them had to do it at the same time. Maybe one person was, you know, on the lookout while the other one was busy poisoning the water. And you know what? They noticed that there was an anomaly in where they were during their shifts. And that's how it was discovered that indeed they were trying to hatch a plan to murder the king. Very good. Any questions at this point? Okay, so just the whole sugya with the moch and Achashverosh and Esther and then her going to Mordechai. Again, I believe on Daf Tesvav on 15, we should get up to that in more detail. Okay, moving forward. Achar Dvar Ha'elab. So if you just look at the pasuk for a moment, Achar Dvar Ha'elab, this is a chaf in mine. Gida Hamach Achashverosh Es Haman Ben Hamadasa Gagi. So this is basically at the point in the story where Achashverosh elevates Haman to being second to the king. So Acher Mai, after what are we talking about here? Amar Rava, Acher Shavar Kadosh Baruch Hu Refu Lamaka. After God created the remedy to the plague. Damar Yish Lakish, Ina Kadosh Baruch Hu Maka Es Yisrael El Imkin Bore Lehem Refu Tachila. Because the rule is as follows, that God does not bring a plague, a malady against the Jewish people, unless he already created a remedy that pre-existed. Shenemar, Karafili Yisrael Benigla Avon Ephraim. So first I will heal the Jewish people, and then I will reveal their iniquities. Avakumasa Ailam, whereas the nations of the world, Eno came. Mako-san, first God hits them, the Acherkach bore them before, then afterwards he creates for them an antidote, a remedy. Shenemar, but Agavash Mitzrayim, go for a hope. So first God smite them, whatever it is in past tense.
Smote.
Thank you, Zay. I was right the first
it's
time.
It's a past tense of smite.
Okay, thank you. I thought I got it right the first time. Thank you. So he smote them, and then he healed them. Vayivaz Be'enav. Okay, good. Moving on to the next pasuk we're going to darshan here. Vayivaz Be'enav L'shloach Yavah Mordechai Levado. So actually, if you take a look, we have to, the Gemara doesn't quote for us the entire pasuk, but if you have the right kind of Gemara with you, your art scrolls will likely do it in the footnote, I would imagine. If you look down, we get the entire pasuk. So for me, it is none. For those who are looking at the Gemara, so first, he wanted to strike Mordechai alone. Kikidulo es am Mordechai. Then note that it says the nation of Mordechai. And then note that it says, call Yehudim, all the Jews. So basically, there were three steps to what went on in Haman's head. First, Amarava. Initially, Haman just wanted to kill Mordechai because Mordechai refused to bow down to him. And it was Mordechai as an individual who was in the front to him. And then he wanted to kill the nation of Mordechai, referring to his fellow rabbis. And at the end of the pasuk, we see at the end of the day, he said, you know what? Once I'm going there, may as well get my wish come true and kill all the Jews. Okay. So what does he do? He peeled poor. So he, right? Why is the holiday called Purim? Because he makes a pour. He makes a lottery to decide which month he will decide to kill the Jews. Now, we see this in the Gemara, and the Gemara kind of has this idea, arguably because it was a general notion back then, that there's something called mazalos, and that different months have different mazel to them. So what Haman is trying to figure out is, well, which month will be the best for killing the Jews? If he picks a month like Nisan, God took us out of Egypt in that month. You know, different months were pretty good for the Jews. So which month would be a good month to, where nothing special happened? In fact, something bad happened for them. So he picks Adar. How did that happen? Tana. Came with Shnafa Pur, Bechodesh Adar, Samach Simcha Gedola. Why? Why was he so ecstatic about Adar? Amar, Nafali Pur, Beyerach Shemes Moshe. Oh, what better holiday to kill the Jews? What better month to kill the Jews than the month that their leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, died? How apropos. Certainly luck is on my side. Well, Eloha Yodea, Shebeshuva Ba'adar Mace, Ubeshuva Ba'adar Nolan. That on the 7th of Adar, true, he died, but also on the 7th of Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu was born. So to a certain degree, it's also a fortuitous month, because Moshe Rabbeinu was born on the 7th of Adar. So, therefore, it's kind of funny. I meant to look into this actually beforehand, if anyone has insight. It's funny that he would know that Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar, but also didn't know that Moshe was born during Adar. I guess he didn't learn the klal in the Gemara that tzaddikim are born and die on the same day. But it's funny how, you know, he had, you know what he had? He had the Yahrzeit book. You know, there's these, I remember in school, when I was in 10th grade, my Rebbe would open up the shir every day and he'd go through whose yard site it was. He had a book that had all the different yard sites. So it'd be like, you could be like a Hasidish Rebbe in Borough Park with like a minion of followers, and you made it into that book. So one day I was like being a provocateur. I looked up Rasalvajic's yard site, which is sometime in Nisan, and that, like, looked through the book. I'm like, why isn't Rasalvajic in this book? He's like, oh, you know, he was a Talmud Chacham, but he wasn't a tzaddik. So that started a whole kerfuffle over there. I was trying to make some trouble. But in those Yahrzeit books, it only tells you when someone dies. It doesn't tell you when they're born. So presumably, Haman snatched one of those Yahrzeit books from the local cheder, and he didn't really know when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. Okay, I don't know.
It's now online. If you want to know days, you don't have to say Tachanun, because it's some Rebbe's Yahrzeit.
Very good, Henry. Very good.
Well, maybe because the Jews observe the Yahrzeit site, and we don't observe birthdays that are of people who are gone.
Very good. So, like, along the lines of what Henry was saying, you know, he only saw what the Jews were observing, which is the Yahrzeit, meaning he looked and, like, oh, they didn't say Tachanun today. Why not? Oh, you didn't say Tachanun because Moshe Rabbeinu died. Okay, got it. So, you know, like, was Mordechai, how many even know what Tachanun was? Were they even doing Tachanun as this? I mean, Tachanun only became like an established formula later on. Okay, we could conjecture about this. Right, no, that's true.
There was a dinner.
That's true. Maybe. Okay.
If Haman knew Tanakh, he could have derived it from the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. That's how they bit back into the 7th of Adar.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting.
Because it has the date when Pesach was observed when they first came into Eretz Yisrael. And then if you walk backwards and say for Yahushua, you'll get to, and then the 30 days of mourning, and you'll get back to the 7th.
That's how we calculated. Very
but
good.
Only if Haman knew Tanakh. I don't know that he knew Tanakh. Yeah.
And even if you just did a cursory read through Tanakh, I mean, I once upon a time I learned to say for Yeshua, but I didn't make that whole calculation on my own. But no, Haman's probably a bigger Talmud Chacham than I am, I'm sure. All right, so let's go forward. Where are we? Yeshno Am Echad. So Amar Rava, Leika Diyada Lishna Bishak Haman. There was no one who knew how to speak foul language. You speak bad about, just speak evil like Haman. Amar Le, Ta Nichlinhu. So he says to Achashverosh, let's go destroy the Jews. Amarle, Agashir says, you know, Mistat, really, I'm with you in principle. I love to kill the Jews also. But Mistafina Melaham to Liavid be the Avikamai. I'm scared of the same way God smote those who came before me. Remember, we talked about Belshazzar? I'm afraid the same thing's going to happen to me as well if I start over the Jews. Amarle, so he responded, Yashnu min ha-mitzvos. We switched the kudos around over there. They've neglected to keep the mitzvos. That's what he means by the word yud shin nun vav. So they've neglected to keep the mitzvos. So now, and if I recall correctly, that was the strategy with the Suda as well. Getting the Jews to come to the Suda Achashverosh, the meal, was in order so that they would sin at that Suda. And by sinning during the Suda Achashverosh, during the meal at the palace of Achashverosh, then they would become vulnerable to Haman killing them. God would not protect them. So Amarle, Isbuhu Rabbanan. But Achashverosh said, okay, well, but they got some rabbis who presumably are keeping halacha, so, you know, they'll protect them. Amarle, Amachadhein, they are one nation, which can be read in different ways. Either it can mean that even the rabbis aren't so good, or it can mean that the rabbis are responsible for the people not keeping halacha as well, or everyone's responsible for each other. And so just because some people are keeping mitzvahs on their own, it's not sufficient if they don't care for the welfare of their fellow Jews. So as long as enough of them are sinning, it's as if all of them are sinning, and all of them are now susceptible to whatever we want to do to them. Now, Haman preempts something else that Ahasuerus might be concerned about. Now, I'm glad I got you on board. I'm glad you're not afraid of killing them, meaning you're not going to incur divine retribution. But Shema Tomar Karchan Yosef Achusefa. So you might say, oh, what's going to happen? These Jews make up a significant part of my kingdom. And if you wipe them all out, it's, you know, there's going to be economic issues. There'll be inflation. There'll be, more trade issues that go on. So who knows what? So, Mufuzarnein bein ha'amim. They are spread out, amongst the nations. So, you know, look, if a Jew, if one Jew in Denver and a Jew in there and a Jew over there disappears, no one's going to notice. So, Shema Tomar ishanami nayu. And if you're going to say, oh, but you know, the Jews are really smart. The Jews make the best lawyers. The Jews make the best accountants. What's going to happen to our society if we don't have any Jews? So, Mifuran, Gifredozo, She'ina Osaperos. They're like a mule that doesn't bear any fruit, because I believe a mule is a cross between a donkey and a horse, and so it's sterile. It's not able to actually have progeny. So it's like, they're like a mule. It's interesting how Mifura became Kipreda, all these drushes over here, that they are, you know, split off, and that becomes like a mule. Veshema Tomar Ika Medinsa Minayu. Maybe there's a Medina that's full of Jews. Maybe there's like a, you know, a whole country or a huge shtetl somewhere that makes up a significant part of my population. And if I were to kill them off, I'd be down to 126 nations and 727. Tamalomar, Bechol Medinas Mafusecha. Don't worry. They don't have their own special country. They are just spread out everywhere, and we can round them out. Now, what? Now you might be wondering, what's so bad about the Jews? Why does Achashverosh agree with Haman? Now, Haman, he had it out for Mordechai. So maybe that led him to have prejudices against Jews in general. That's usually how things work. That if someone of a certain group does something, then you could generalize to the broader group. That's generally, you know, like racism 101. But hey, wait a minute. You know, what do they actually have? What did Achashverosh have against all the Yidden? So this was Haman's argument that he made to Achashverosh. The Sam Shonos Mikol Am, and their laws are different from all the other nations. Now, listen to this argument and tell me if anything has changed over all the millennia. Lo Achli Minan, Lo Nas Minan, Lo Minas Bilan. They do not eat any of our food. They don't marry our women. They don't want to marry their women to us. As Dasi Hamelech Inam Osim, and they don't want to do any work. They don't want to keep any of the laws. They don't pay their taxes to the IRS. The Mafi Lekula Shasa, B'Shabbos Hayom, Pesach Hayom. Because every day we want to get them to work. They say, oh, you know, I work, but it's Shabbos today. Oh, it's Pesach today. I have another holiday I'm keeping. Pesach Sheni. I got no Tachna and I'm off today. So, like, wow, this is like the same. Nothing's changed in history, right? And you know what? It's better for you. You'll be much better off without them. Because they eat from us, they drink from us, but they're a bunch of parasites. Meanwhile, while they're benefiting from us, they're busy ridiculing us behind our backs. If a fly went into their wine, they would pick it out, they throw out the fly, and they would drink the wine. However, if you, the king, were to touch their wine, then they would throw out the wine altogether because stam yedam, right? A guy is not allowed to pour your wine for you if it's not mevushal. That's stam yedam because the concern is back in the day, not just back in the day, you go to like a Catholic service, they consecrate the wine, a wine libation. So the Chachamim said, because the way that the pagans and many religions, they use wine as part of their service, we can never know that if they pick up that wine, they didn't mean to consecrate it. Therefore, if a non-Jew has access to your wine and pours your wine and it hasn't been mevushal, then it's problematic. It's you can't use it anymore. Now, why do we care about mevushal, non-mevushal, if it's cooked, if it's not cooked? So wine connoisseurs tell me that you can't compare wine that's mevushal to wine that's not mevushal. Because once you start cooking the wine, it's not the same wine anymore. I'm more of a Scotch guy than a wine guy, but I'll take it from the wine connoisseurs. So it happens to be the ancient pagans thought the same thing. If you were to cook the wine, they wouldn't use it for their services anymore because you've ruined it. So that's why mevushal solves the issue. So what he's saying, what Haman is saying to Ahasuerus is that if you go ahead and you touch their wine, they'll throw out the wine altogether. You're worse than a fly to them. You're worse than a fly. So after hearing all this, Ahasuerus is won over by Haman, and they come to an agreement. So Haman says, Haman tries to add what, you know, the cherry on top. So he says, you know what? And I know I'm making a convincing argument, but it will help you. I'll make a huge donation to your palace fund. You know, I'll give you a lot of money, Ahasuerus, which is kind of funny because if he's the king, I'm not sure why he needs Haman's donation. But Haman is offering to, you know, you always want more money, I guess. So you can never get enough donations. That's a cloud guddle. We have to get the president nodding the head there. That's good. So he offers to give him a lot of money. Amar Ish Lakish, Golev Yadulif name Misha Amar Bahaya Olam. This is really good. God knew. God exists above time, so God knows what will happen in the future. So God, I mean, the Rabbah has something to say about that, but we'll leave that for now. So God knew that many years down the line, Haman would want to buy off Ahasuerus with all these coins, with all these shkalim. Lefikach hikdim shkalehen l'shkalav. Therefore, God provided us with the merit of shkalim, of giving coin donations before Haman's offering. And this is what we learned, of course, in Maseches Shkalim, in the Mishnah. Bechad v'adar mashmin al hashkalim ba'al haklaim. That on the first of Adar, that's when the rabbis start telling us, you know, start sending in your shkalim for the temple fund, which is used in Nisan, and that's when they come around also to start plucking klaim out of people's fields when you have mixed breeds. So the idea is that God put it on our calendar that we would start donating shkalim in order to counteract the shkalim that Haman wants to offer to kill us. All right, any questions? All right. I mean, yeah. Not a lot of questions on story time, I know. Well, we got a lot of story time ahead, don't worry. Okay, so moving forward, we're on the bottom. Here we are. By Yomer HaMelech LaHaman. Every time I say Haman, by the way, at this point, like I keep pausing, like waiting for someone to bank. But this is the the 6:30 version, not the 7:30.
Yeah,
I think I got in trouble for that actually, because I told everyone not to bang, but because that's usually the minhag at the early minyanim. But apparently at a good shalom we bang no matter what. So okay, that's one woman came to me and she's like, I was so thankful I made my train because we didn't do the banging. But okay. Vayomer Hamelech LaHaman, Hakesef Nasan Lach Ba'amat Sospo Ketobei Necha. Ahasuerus says, you know what? What you're talking about, these Jews, I agree. It sounds like I could do without them as well. Get rid of them all. And you know what? You could keep the money. Amar Rabbi Abba, Moshel Dachashirash Vahaman Lama Dabar Dome. What does this remind us of? It could remind us of the following parable. B'shnei b'nei Adam, le'echer ha'ilo tel, b'sof sadeyu, le'echer ha'ilo chritz, b'sof sadeyu. Two people, two neighbors, or you know, two people in the same neighborhood. One person has a chritz, one person has a hole in his yard. The other person has a mound in his yard. So what's going on over here? The guy who has a hole doesn't want to fall into the hole. He needs some dirt to fill it up, but he doesn't have any. The guy who has a mound in his backyard, he's like, why do I have this big keep in my backyard? If someone could hole it, that'd be great. So what happens? Who will go ahead and give me some a tail, a mound to fill this up? I'd be willing to pay for it. Who will give me a hole so I can get rid of the mound in my yard? One day, both of them happen to meet each other. They're at a Kiddush on Shabbos. They bump into each other. They both start complaining about their problems. Amar lo ba'al chritz ba'atel. Machur li teilech. Telcha. Sell me your mound. Amar lo. Tol ota b'chinam ba'alavai. If you could hold it, take it. It's like, imagine, if I have a couch that I want to get rid of. And you need a couch. So I say, you don't have to pay me for the couch. If you could hold it, if you're willing to take it out of my apartment, by all means, you can have it for free. So that's what it was like for Ahasuerus and for Haman. Ahasuerus says, you know, if you could get these Jews off my hands, you'll take this mound off my hands, then please, by all means. And you know what? You can keep your money. Just do me this favor, Haman. So it turned out was instead of Haman, and that's usually how you pitch it to people. That's like you say... That's because we're just talking about fundraising before. You don't say, I need the money from you. You say, I'm offering an opportunity to you, right? That's the shtick. So that's how you get people to contribute things. So that's basically how Haman got Ahasuerus to agree that Ahasuerus didn't view as him doing a favor for Haman, but Haman was offering Ahasuerus an opportunity. And so we leave off with over here where Ahasuerus agrees to Haman's scheme. And that's where we will conclude on the top of Yud Dalam and Aleph of 14a. And God willing, we'll pick up with that next time. Should be on Thursday. All right. Shkayach, everyone. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you again for the accommodation, for making the time. And if you are here and available, I hope to see you at the Ska Residence Lecture with Rabbi Grunstein tomorrow evening at 7. Okay. Shkayach,
everyone. Night. Good night.